I suck at jujitsu. How do I suck less?
I guess
this
sucks less.
Ladies and gentlemen, the
Bellator
Heavyweight Champion, the leader of
this is Josh McKinney, and I just want to welcome you to the newest episode of the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu Show. So today, we are being visited by a very special guest. He's been on the show multiple times at this point. My good friend, Andrew Evers, the head coach of Wolves Den. We know him as Mop. I think everybody knows him as Mop. But he is a really great MMA coach. He is the coach to UFC fighter Sean Woodson and has been for a long time. We always get to kind of talk about that perspective. You know, he offers this cool perspective of getting to be a UFC coach and what that is like and how UFC treats you and what it's like being in the corner for some of these really big fights. And also, we didn't have it was like a month ago that we recorded this episode, so we didn't have all of the dates and stuff off the top of our head, but January 20th is going to be Sean's fight, and this is going to definitely be one to tune into. I'm always excited to see how much he's developed as an athlete, because you know, I'm good friends with his coach, and you know, coaches, a lot of times, maybe we don't get the praise that we deserve. Maybe sometimes we sing our own praises too much. But Mop does a really good job with his athletes, in my opinion. And he really has this unique perspective of fighting. And he has a unique perspective, a conceptual perspective of fighting and of jiu-jitsu. And so we get to kind of conversate about that. We get to dig in on his approach to getting fighters ready. But then also what I think is unique about this, we dig into his approach to building a group of coaches and building a team of coaches, which I think any jiu-jitsu school owner will tell you is one of the hardest things to do, is to not just be the only guy there and to create an environment with a lot of coaches and a lot of good teachers. I think that's just a battle, and I think he's done a good job of it. And he offers some very unique perspective on that. And so, and then always, when Mop and I talk, it's always just, there is just so much trash that we're saying. We're just spewing ignorance all the time. And that's one of my favorite things about the conversations that Mop and I have. And so this one is no different, for sure. But let's go ahead and I'll stop rambling. Let's go ahead and jump into this conversation that I had with my good friend Mop. Mop, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. Doing pretty solid.
Yeah?
I'm here. It's because I can be.
How's the shoulder?
You know what? Doing better. We actually just got done sparring. I just did like 7 rounds of kickboxing sparring, so don't tell him.
I don't think you're allowed to be doing that.
Don't be telling him that, you know.
How long were you supposed to be before you were supposed to be sparring? and then, like, where are you at now with it?
I'm probably a month out from being able to do a little bit of sparring, but I can't grapple at all.
Okay.
There's no way. My range of motion, my strength's there, but the range of motion in my shoulder, like, going backwards, like, with, like, an Americana position, is still not 100%. But, you know, I can raise my head over my arm over my head, put it behind my back and stuff. So the kickbox, it's not that hard. I just got to pick who I go with.
What was the injury?
I had a slap tear in my labrum. It was about 85% gone. So it was pretty nasty. I had six anchors put in my shoulder.
All right.
Yeah, very fun. Very good time.
Yeah, that's, you know, then they replaced your shoulder with a robot shoulder.
Yes,
too.
I have a robot shoulder now.
Perfect.
You'd think it'd be stronger, but it doesn't really feel like that.
Man, last time I saw you, I don't know, I guess I would have been that last STL Invitational. It seemed like you had no range of motion in your shoulder at that time.
Oh, yeah.
I was sure that, like, man, I could just jump on a Kimura on this guy.
Yes.
And, it would have been a rough one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it hurts being so flexible. You know?
Yeah.
You end up having to get surgeries every once in a while.
Was that something that, was that like an acute injury? Was this something that happened over time?
It happened about 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
I took a shot. It was actually a pretty good shot. I was going to say it was a bad shot, but it was actually a pretty good shot. And I was going up against a pretty solid college wrestler. We a scramble ensued, and my shoulder came completely out of socket. I had to go get put it in. I had to get put under in order to get my shoulder put back in. It was that bad. Worst pain I've ever felt in my entire life. And, you know, they were like, you should go get an MRI on this. So, like, any good, you know, jiu-jitsu, MMA fighter. I didn't.
Of course.
You know, no, it just, that would take me out of training.
I can't even spell MRI, yeah, bro. Exactly. Like, what are you talking about?
It's difficult. I know. But it was a bad injury over time, and I was getting ready for a fight. Like, it was the first time I was injury free in a long time, and I felt amazing. And then it just, every single session came out. And I mean, like, out, like, had to put it back in out. So I was like, I can't do this. So if I want a long, healthy training life, I had to get it fixed. So
then did it start to bother you more again recently? Cause it, like, you trained with it for.
It feels fine now. Like, there's certain positions where it sucks, mm-hmm. but really, like, day to day, I don't notice it a whole lot until I try to do something really strenuous.
Dude, we had, I don't know what it is with the dislocations. We had like 3 dislocations in a month at our gym. Yeah. Had one of them was a big toe that just basically completely came off.
But you just put tape on that.
Yeah, man, it wasn't, the bone was sticking out.
Oh, yeah,
you can't put tape. And so, I was like, we got to call somebody on this. Yeah. One was a kneecap, and then, what was the third one? Oh, the third one was somebody's forearm bone popped out of there.
Just right out?
And it's like, and it's fun. Like, when did jiu-jitsu cause injuries?
You know? When? Yeah. I don't know. I've never had one. You know, so I'm on that was my 6th surgery, I think, that I've ever had. You know, I've had 2 knee surgeries, 2 surgeries on my shin from a break, pretty bad break when I was 16. My nose, and now my shoulder. Am I forgetting any? I think that's it.
You ever just think 6? About, like, tapping?
You know, a lot of them haven't. Well, the shin was definitely a tapping issue, right?
Okay.
I should have tapped to the straight ankle lock. But, you know, I heard from Boss Rutten in his DVDs of combat that straight ankle locks don't work. Over and over again, he just kept saying it. So it was like, in my mind, straight ankle locks don't work. But like, my shin came completely in half. I just caved. Snap.
You know what's weird is people like that didn't come from our generation of grappling. Mm-hmm. They really don't believe that that was an actual thing. That straight ankle, like that people like that was straight ankle lock defense.
Yeah.
Was that no straight ankle locks don't work.
Oh yeah.
And I one time, you know, and I was 15. I didn't know any better. I was stupid, right? Just like, you know, you break your shin. Yeah. You were young. You know?
Yes, I was a kid.
We don't know any better. Mm-hmm. I convinced my dad, who was, you know, 50, that straight ankle locks don't work. And he's in the pans. And he got straight ankle locked. And he still tells this story as if I'm the villain of the story, right?
You probably are.
Yeah. And I, okay, maybe. But again, I was 15. I plead ignorance, right? I plead being 15.
You were 15. You were definitely the villain in that
story. Okay, that's true, too. Well, he's still, you know, at 62, 63, he still walks with a permanent limp because of that straight ankle lock. But he didn't tap.
Did he win?
Yeah, he won the match.
Well, then it was worth it.
It was.
See, I lost, so it wasn't worth it.
You know, I think that he might beg to differ at this point. I think that, you know, painted silver medal at the Pan Ams is not really, not really the thing for him from blue belt that
you know,
he cares about.
Each to their own, you know?
That's
true. I would have told all my students not to tap.
Do you have a worse injury that you've ever seen on the mat?
Mine, that one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, both of them. Both of them were both. Actually, all 3 of the worst injuries, 3 of the 4 worst injuries I've ever seen on the mat are mine.
Really?
Yes, they are. Yep. I had the dislocation with my shoulder because it was out. Like, I could show you pictures. Like, my shoulder was here.
Oof.
And it was the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. I was throwing up. It was really bad. The shin one was really bad because it did get snapped completely in half on the mat. And then what made it so grotesque is while they were carrying me off on the mat, my father was given the task of supporting the injured leg.
Oh, no.
And he grabbed my calf when my break was below my calf. So as you could see when they
went,
and I screamed.
Oh,
he had to grab
no.
my ankle. He was very uncomfortable grabbing my heel, keeping it attached to my leg. And then another one was Sean broke my nose, and my nose was over here.
Oh, man.
It was literally, I couldn't. It was one of those things, like, I could see my nose in my eyesight. It was, like, blinding one of my eyes. It was pretty bad. And then I had another guy that got taken down, and his elbow went all the way that way because he posted, don't post on takedowns. just the whole podcast, it's like
snowboarding, right? Yes. And it's like
you don't post.
Yeah, you land on your elbows. You don't land on your hands.
Yes, he landed on his hand and his arm went completely out, and I had to drive him to the hospital. So those are the worst ones I've ever seen, and unfortunately, they've all been on me.
Yeah, so that's rough. You know, that's honestly the not supporting the ankle. I'm a pretty new dad, but I'm pretty sure that's a dad fail.
Yeah, it is a dad fail. Yeah. So now for the future, if that ever happens to you, you know what to do.
Yeah. If that ever happens to my son, like, don't worry. Don't worry. I heard about this.
And then you can tell him to send me the thank you card in the mail and you're good to go.
I like that. So, you know, a few different things I want to talk to you about today. But you brought up Sean, so we kind of just can get into, you know, what we haven't talked since his last fight.
Yes.
And, his last fight was a great fight.
Oh yeah. And chaos though.
It was. So how many opponent changes does he have in the lead up to that?
Was it four?
That's what I thought.
Steve Garcia. And then God, who was after Steve Garcia? I can't remember who was after Steve Garcia. And then this like little Brazilian cat. And like he couldn't get a visa, and because Garcia got hurt, he got a really bad rib injury. And then I don't know what happened with the next guy. And then the Brazilian dude didn't get a visa. And then we settled on someone from New York, from the best gym in the world, in my opinion. So, or one of them, one of the best gyms in the world. Like, God, what was that dude's? I forgot this dude's name already. Who just fought him?
I literally just looked it up today,
that's a nice question.
As you can see, my notepad is empty.
Bazooka.
Oh,
yes.
Man.
Bazooka. There you go. Thanks, Bryce.
Bryce, you're hired.
Usefulness. For once, you know?
And then that guy missed weight, right?
No, he didn't. Oh, yeah, no, he did. And it was very close, but he, like, died on the scale. I mean, he only had 4 days to get ready. But it was funny because Sean was having a conversation with Billy Quintello. Like, Billy was like, hey, heard you had an opponent. And he's like, nope, he dropped out. And then he hops on the phone and calls Dennis Bazooka and is just like, hey, we got a fight for you. And then all of a sudden we had a fight.
All right.
So, you know, and that guy was tough. You know, he did just get knocked out in his last fight, so that was really unfortunate. But we were actually pretty worried about him because he had a lot of power, a lot of skill. And like I said, I mean, training with Aljamain Sterling and Merab every day, and these guys are just hyping this guy up.
Mm-hmm.
He's the next coming, you know, of John Jones. But turned that down, and we did it with the grappling. So, you know, I'll take full credit for that one. You know?
I like it. I like it. So it didn't, at least from the initial watching that fight, it didn't seem like initial game plan was grappling, right? It seemed like it was pretty typical Sean fight range.
Yeah.
I think he was throwing a lot of like low calf kick.
Yeah.
Did the, hey, let's wrestle this guy, did that come up in the middle or was that generally part of the game plan?
Absolutely. It wasn't supposed to be the cornerstone of the game plan like it turned out to be, but the guy had a hard weight cut and Sean was much larger than him and taller. And we were like, hey, let's make him feel our weight a little bit. So the strategy of like if we got an opportunity to push him up against the cage and steal a takedown, that was definitely part of the game plan going in, for sure. But to make it the cornerstone of the entire fight was not the game plan until midway through. Michael Bisping and those guys are all liars. I was telling Sean to grapple. You know, I was telling him to take him down. They confused it. They thought I said, hey, don't drop. What I mean was don't drop for guillotines.
Oh, okay.
Or flying triangles or anything crazy. I was like, just stay on top of them and beat them up. You're winning. Why not? You know, I've always been, I'm in the mindset that if you can take a guy down and not get tired and wear on him for an entire fight and just beat him up, that is probably the safest, best option to go because you're taking away all the dynamic energy of the other guy. Like this guy's got one punch knockout power. Like that could happen at any time. Whereas if I beat him, if I take him down, lay on him, make him feel my weight, you know, really wear the guy out, then all of a sudden your striking becomes significantly more effective going into the next rounds or when he gets up, as long as you don't burn yourself out.
Yeah.
And that's the big one. A lot of guys burn themselves out in the grappling, trying to force it too much, but that wasn't going to be an issue with Sean. He was, you know, he's got the best double leg off the fence ever, because if you can notice this in the fight, like the proper way to defend a double leg on the fence is to spread your legs. And then when they go double, you split them to like a reverse stance. Right. And usually that stops the double leg. And there's actually an instance in that fight where Sean, the guy's going for a double leg on Sean and he does the right defense and then reverses him. And then Sean goes for a double leg on him. He does the exact same defense, but Sean's able to get his fingers like this with his long arms, and it's just unstoppable. It's like you can lock your legs behind somebody's butt on the fence. Like, that's the best takedown in the world,
for sure. Was there something, I'm sure there was, but if you remember, what specifically did you see that made you go, okay, now we need to commit to grappling. Let's start.
He couldn't stop Sean from taking him down. That was the big one. He just couldn't stop Sean from taking him down. And when they were on the feet, the guy was swinging.
Yeah.
You know, the guy was swinging. Sean was picking him apart and beating him up. But like, he just like, when they got on the ground, he just like was so shocked and so just tired and feeling his weight. And I do think possibly Sean could have finished him on the feet, but he even said himself when he was in there, it was like, something felt off on the striking, and the grappling just felt really easy. So, you know, I didn't try to dissuade it at all.
That's something interesting about game plan to me. And I feel like, you know, in jiu-jitsu, in MMA, it's this idea of there is only this, you know, we shouldn't use every avenue to win. It's like this idea like, oh, no, you should be, you know, Sean's a striker. He should be trying to knock people out.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of what you just touched on is, yeah, but we found something that was working.
Yeah.
And when you're in a time-limited fight or a match or whatever, and there is a time limit and you find something that is working, it becomes the clock and you against your opponent versus it just being – you know, okay, well, let's see if I can knock you out in the time, or let's see if I can submit you in the time.
Yeah. And the dude wasn't a finisher off of his back. You know, it wasn't like a Charles Oliveira. He was a guy that, like, he likes to strike, and then he likes to get on top and beat guys up. And, you know, I think one of the best pieces of advice I've ever heard, and this comes to the Boss Root and DVDs of Combat, if you guys haven't ever purchased it. I don't know if you guys remember those, but they're old school, you know, actual DVDs that you had to put in.
Oh,
but you know, the one
I'm sure they had VHS versions
too. Oh, I'm sure they did. Know? He did a little song. It was in the beginning. It was a good time. But they're old. Stuff you would never really use anymore a lot of the times, you know. But he's got a saying that if you want a guy to stop doing something, do it to them first and do it to them repeatedly. And a lot of times that guy will stop doing it, right? So one thing was, we knew Dennis Bazooka was good at low kicks. So we came out and we just started throwing low kicks.
Mm-hmm.
We knew he wanted to take us down, so we took him down. You know, puts the guy in the defensive back foot, you know, like, because if you kick him in the leg, if you kick a guy in the leg and he kicks you right back, you know, you're like, oh man, I don't like getting kicked in the leg. And all of a sudden the leg kicks just kind of stop. And that's really what happened. Bazooka didn't throw a lot of leg kicks. He mostly committed to big overhands, hooks, big punches, and then was trying to go for doubles. And, you know, we just did the same thing right back to him. And the offense just kind of fell apart. And he carried Sean's weight, because carrying someone's weight for 15 minutes is a very grueling experience that nobody likes to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, something that's not thought of, though. I remember being at the Hit Squad, you know, as a child, telling my dad that ankle locks don't work. Okay. And I remember Hughes was talking about fighting somebody, and he was just talking about being against the cage, and he's like, you wouldn't believe how tiring being on somebody right here is. He's like, this is the most tiring thing in the world because you're carrying all my weight.
Oh, yeah.
And I just think I've gotten to do some seminars and private lessons with Henry Akins over the last couple months, and I never learned from him before. Man,
he's great. I've done a private lesson and a seminar with him.
Dude, the stuff that he's teaching, especially when it comes to weight distribution, has been like, oh, wow, you don't realize how much of the whole this matters, right? It may not matter in the one movement that you see or the one technique that you're trying to break down near as much, but when you add it to the 15 techniques that you do throughout the round, that 15th one works so much better because the guy's tired.
Yeah. That is, he transformed how I thought of jiu-jitsu. Like, whenever I trained with him beforehand, I was like trying to pass with like, my passing was like without a doubt the weakest part of my game as a brown belt. And I never quite got it. Right, I would always just try to tight waist and body lock, you know, push guys into half guard and try to pass from there. And then all of a sudden, like, the guys just stop. Obviously, you train with a guy a ton. Like, Vero was training. Remember Tyler Bishop?
Mm-hmm.
I was training with him a ton. He was just able to stop me from passing him over and over again with the same stuff. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And he's just like, it's not any move. I'm not going to teach you a move. It's just like, you need to make him feel like he doesn't want to be an open guard anymore because you're 10,000 pounds, you know? Well, he still can completely shut me down. It worked, you know, in the long run, you know, months later. And it just like started being like, oh, where can I use this elsewhere? You know, I can use this in half guard. I can use this inside control. I can use this pushing up a guy against the fence. You know, he keeps all of his weight off the floor and on the guy, you know, even when he's passing. It's like, you know, you may have a spider guard or a Delahiva guard, and he just puts so much pressure on it. And I'd felt it. And when I felt it, I was like, what the? This guy's, you know, not that big. He's not a normal size guy, you know, and he feels super heavy. So, yeah, that's funny you did that, because I had the same thing with him where I was, like, mind blown afterwards.
And, yeah, dude, that's, like, which exactly what you're saying. I'm just seeing, like, from Spider, from De La Hiva, from all these modern guards that are being played, when you make the first, because generally it's like, okay, I'm playing Spider Guard. Mm-hmm. First thing I'm trying to do is create an angle to open up space. And when you take my first step and you go, no, 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 your first step is you have to carry me.
Yep.
Like, that's always the first step.
He said pressure and angles.
Mm-hmm.
Pressure before the angle.
Exactly. And that's like, man, that made such a difference. I mean, it's been making such a difference in my game. And I feel like I've always had pretty good passing.
Yes,
but
you
it's
do.
Like getting to understand the times that I was still getting offense done to me. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, my weight was, I was carrying my weight. And then just letting the guy move around me. Like, okay, go ahead and make whatever move you want. Versus like, no, your first step in everything is you got to carry me.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the man.
No,
I like him a lot.
No doubt. No doubt. It's funny that, like, when I started to talk to more people about him, everyone was like, oh, yeah, I got to train with him. Totally blew my mind.
Yes, totally. Because he doesn't really teach. I mean, he taught a bunch of techniques in the seminar, but when we did the private lesson, I think he did not teach me a single technique.
Yeah.
It was just all, like, just philosophy and like concepts more so than techniques. But, you know, when you got the seminar thing, a bunch of people, you start teaching techniques. But, yeah, it just... From him, it was like the ability to escape and the ability to pass. Like, he just kind of changed that for me quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. And that's like, that's a fun thing. We always do talk about this. That's the thing about concept in grappling and in fighting, is it can be something as simple as something you heard in a Boss Rootin' DVD.
Yes.
You know? Exactly. And it just, like, it sticks with you, and it's like, no, this is just my new way of thinking about fighting.
Yep.
And, that is that so on these Boss Rootin' DVDs, are these the ones that he was like in the bar showing you?
Oh,
like,
no, that's a different one.
Okay, okay.
Those are gems though, right?
Yeah.
Those are the best DVDs ever made for combat for sure.
And I love like the fact they basically were like, hey, we don't have a sound effects budget.
Yeah.
So Boss, we need you to make all the sound effects with your mouth.
Oh, he's the best.
Oh my gosh.
This younger generation will never get to experience that as a gem of Boss Rootin' commentary and just existence. Like, you guys don't know. Like Gen Z, you're screwed. You don't know.
That is the truth. They're
you
know, you're busy trying to learn from YouTube shorts.
Yeah.
And I'm posting a lot of YouTube shorts, but Bryce will tell you all the stuff I'm posting is BS on the YouTube shorts, man.
Oh yeah.
You gotta be long form content to learn anything good.
For real, you do.
Know? Yeah.
For real you do.
We just tell jokes on the shorts, man.
Yeah, the shorts are the way to go. Have you been having a lot of success getting a lot of traffic with the shorts?
I mean, definitely a lot more. Yeah. But a lot of success, like, no. I mean, we were talking about having a fourth camera. Like, I can't afford that, you know, from the YouTube shorts. So it depends on, you know, how you're measuring success. If you measure success in likes, like, yeah, we've been having more success. But if you measure success in dollars, no, not at all.
Well, you know what? One day you may convert those likes to dollars if you're lucky.
Yeah, you know, you always say that. But until they make, like, something that can translate likes to dollars, like OnlyFans, but for guys in jiu-jitsu.
That'll never happen.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's your Craig Jones.
Yes.
That doesn't happen.
I think he's got an OnlyFans.
Yeah,
so.
I think he does. He gets sponsored by OnlyFans.
Maybe that's the next
big
move.
OnlyFans logo right here on this table.
I think that's, we probably don't have the, you know, like when you go with who listens to the show and what, you know, what the audience, I don't think that's the same crew.
I don't know. I don't know if jiu-jitsu guys subscribe to OnlyFans or not. Who knows?
I think, though, that the Isaac Jiu-Jitsu Show audience is a bit older. And, like, they're like, you know, hey, I just figured out email and podcasting, bro.
Maybe you could get an OnlyFans girl on the podcast. You know?
And
that might do it.
And talk jujitsu.
And talk jujitsu, yes.
That's a good idea.
It's a great idea.
I mean, just like ask their opinions about things and then act like I really care.
Yes. You know? Like, really care. That'll drive traffic. I promise.
Yeah. And then just have a bunch of, you know, Bryce would clip the heck out of that one.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I think so.
All right. On a different note. back to what we were just talking about. So Sean has a fight.
Yes.
January 20th.
Yes. Canada.
Canada. So yes. Who is he fighting? And
Charles Jourdain.
Can you tell us, obviously, you know, Charles Jourdain's probably an Iseka Jiu-Jitsu show listener, so you don't want to share too much about the game plan or anything, but how is training going? How is everything going for this?
Good. You know, camp really just started, you know, like a week ago. You know, we don't like to push too hard for like 12, you know, weeks. Maybe if like he had a fight like a year ago, maybe, and we were on a year-long hiatus, we'd probably start camp a couple weeks earlier. But since, you know, he just fought a few months ago, we're starting camp a little bit later. You know, he's in good shape. Never stopped training after the fight. Sean's one of those guys that's always still in there training when there's not a fight, which is 99% of my guys, because I don't really allow people to fight without doing that.
Uh-huh.
I think it's the worst thing you could possibly do as an MMA fighter, but yet so many of them do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good. It's going good. We got a pretty good game plan for him. You know, Charles Jourdain likes to low kick a lot. I don't know. Have you ever seen Charles Jourdain fight before?
I haven't watched a fight since the last time Sean fought.
Oh, yeah. Well, at least you're staying on my guys.
If nobody from St. Louis is in it, I'm just...
Well, now you'll get to watch Charles Jourdain fight.
There all right. Nice. All right.
Here we go.
I feel like I'm going to hate him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he is Canadian.
Oh. Dude, you're selling me already. You're selling me already.
He is from Canada, and we do have to go to Canada to fight him. So I'm already at like a baseline anger about all that. You know, I have to leave America. Like, who would want to do that?
Nobody. You know, nobody. That's why there is no border guarding Canada from America.
Exactly.
Yeah, nobody's coming over that way, man.
But yeah, it's going to be in Toronto. I'm pretty excited about that. Toronto seems like a pretty cool city, you know, so I can't wait to travel around that place and enjoy it and then watch Sean get the W. So, you know, or Charles Jourdain is a striker and he's aggressive. So it's probably going to be a pretty exciting fight because, you know, Sean's going to attempt to box his face off, you know.
Bryce brought it up, and I'm not sure, but is this his first pay-per-view that he's been on?
I don't think he's on the pay-per-view. I think he's headlining the undercard. So it is actually a pretty big spot, you know, pretty big fight, but he's not quite
on the pay-per-view. Thanks a lot, Bryce. Thanks a lot. The one piece of research that you do.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Bryce, you're fired.
He might be on the pay-per-view, but I'm pretty sure he's on the headlining the undercard.
Okay.
What I think. But, you know, I could be fucking wrong.
Who Bryce knows? Could be right.
You're asking the wrong person. Who do you think I am?
I get it. I mean, you are his coach.
Yeah, you know. I don't know Dana White, though. I gave him a fist bump once.
All right. How was that?
It was pretty cool. You know, Sean just won. He TKO'd a guy, and Dana White popped through like a magic door somewhere. Like, it's like we were walking down an aisle, and he just popped through like a magic door. We didn't even see the door there, and we just fist bumped all of us and ran away.
It's like, all right.
You know, like a leprechaun.
That would have been, man, that's hell yeah. That's a claim to fame.
So obviously, right there. When I tell people this story, I'm like, yeah, we hung out. We had dinner. We got this number.
Yeah. Me and Dana, big friends, man.
We are. We're cool. Yeah. You know?
Yeah, definitely a better relationship than I have with him.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you definitely know him better than me.
I did get blocked from his Twitter when I was younger. So, you know, I don't think we've patched things up.
Do you think you're still blocked from his Twitter?
Well, I have a different Twitter now, so probably not. You know, I deleted it, you know, but I talked a lot of shit when I was a young man.
Do you remember the tweet?
It was several, probably. I was angry about something. Yeah, you know, when you're a young, cool, liberal college student, you complain about a lot of things.
I get it. And so, and the only person to take it out on is Dana White, man.
The only person, you know? I'm like, what a fascist, you know?
What's up, guys? Josh McKinney here. Just wanted to interrupt this episode and tell you about something really exciting that we have going on at SimplifyingJiu-Jitsu.com right now as we speak. And that is this. If you want to level up your guard passing, if you want to have an understanding of guard passing that nobody in your gym, nobody that you compete against has, you need to understand distance from guard passing. More specifically, you need to understand chest over chest and excessive distance and the importance of these two distances and how these two distances make you unsweepable, unsubmittable while you are on top. And the more you can understand them, the more you can attain these two distances, the more you can bounce back and forth between these two distances, and the more you are immune to jujitsu while you are on top. And the only way to get this understanding right now is with the seminars that I did at Watson Martial Arts and Parada Jiu-Jitsu over the last couple months. These two seminars combined for the price of one will change the way you look at guard passing. They will change the way you look at top in general. And they are only available at simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com. And if you purchase these two seminars for the price of one, you also get a third bonus seminar, what we call The Pinch. This is about a 35-minute seminar where we look at what upper body control actually is, what to actually do once you finally attain chest over chest, and how to keep it forever with very minimal effort and being able to put a lot of pressure on your opponents. And that is, again, only available at simplifyingjiu-jitsu.com. We'll make sure to link it in the description. Let's go ahead and get back to the episode.
Now I'm like, Dana White's the greatest ever.
You're
ever.
Like, I do anything. I fist bumped him once, man.
Yeah. We're friends. We're cool. Yeah.
So for you, you kind of even mentioned it just you're with coaching, but kind of the main reason, the kind of main thought that I had for this interview was, you know, we talked a lot last time about like the new facility that you guys are going into and just kind of the future of Wolves Den for you. But something that I think you do really well that we've never really talked about is team building, not in the fact of like building fighters, but in the fact of having a good group of coaches. And so just for you right now, what does your coaching staff kind of look like?
Diverse. For sure. That's for sure. If I had a DEI score, it'd be 100 on my coaching staff.
All right.
You know? Well, I mean, I have so many coaches. I got Devin Bird, one of my MMA fighters, a wrestling coach. You know, he wrestled at London Wood. He's a college wrestler. Really good coach. Had a really big shoes to take up because we had Cornell Robinson for a while. If I don't know if you know who that is. But, I mean, he coaches the best. He was the head coach for CBC. And while he was the head coach of CBC, he was still our wrestling coach. You know, for $100 a month, steal. Robbed him blind. But he just was passionate about it. He loves MMA and stuff like that. But, you know, now he runs the Wyoming Seminary School, which is the number one ranked high school in the country. And they're amazing. And he's got Russians, like, in his room wrestling for high school. So that's pretty wild. So he was a phenomenal coach. But Devin's done a great job filling his shoes, doing a good job. Got JP for the kickboxing and Jake Duff for the kickboxing. They've done a great job, and we both had we had a world medalist this year at the Waco Games, Liz Helton, who's also one of our coaches, and then her wife Lily is also one of our kickboxing coaches as well. So we got a lot of striking coaches that come in. I pretty much do the MMA by myself now. Like, Drew does a lot of the matchmaking and stuff like that, but I pretty much take care of all the MMA. I've got a purple belt that does one of my advanced jiu-jitsu classes, and then I do really the and then another purple belt that does the gi, and then I really do most of like the competition no gi classes, some of the beginner no gi classes, and that's mainly my role in the MMA. You know, I like to give my coaches a lot of responsibility, right? I don't micromanage. I don't try to tell them what to teach or what not to teach. I just kind of let them teach, let them be creative in their own space.
What is something that you're looking for, or some things that you're looking for when bringing on a coach?
They have to not be able to. This is the worst thing for any coach, especially if we're in a room full of a lot of them, a lot of different coaches doing lots of different things. You cannot tell a student that another coach told you something wrong. That's the wrong phrase, the term wrong. You tell them, this is what I do.
I like that.
And it changes the whole dynamic of the relationship, because once you start having coaches telling each other that other coaches are telling you wrong, that these are the incorrect things to do, then you start building little cliques and little cults within your culture. And I do not stand for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you can't be dissing coaches openly in my gym. That is not a thing. The coaches, I don't think a lot of owners of gyms do this, but my coaches come before my students. They're more important on the hierarchy of who I listen to and who I respond to. So it's like I have to take care of them and make sure nobody's, that internally nothing is going on like gossip wise or anything like that between coaches. Like every coach has to feel appreciated. They have to feel like they're doing a good job and that nobody's butting heads with each other on a coaching level. And our gym does the best I've ever seen at that. Like, you know, there's a couple, you know, a couple times it happens. Most of the time, most of my coaches are really open to other philosophies, other teaching styles, other techniques, you know, and you just kind of let the, you just kind of let the students gravitate towards who they like the most.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that happens. Like, my two jiu-jitsu coaches I have to, they have their own little group of guys that gravitate more to them than me, and that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's cool. You can gravitate to who you like, you know, as long as I'm the boss at the end of the day, you know. I've recently been making them all call me Caesar, so
I like that.
Working out pretty well.
I like that.
Yes.
Good Dana White move right there.
Yeah, they
man.
All have, you know what? I learned some things from him from that hangout session. We hung out, we killed, like he said, have all of your employees call you Caesar, boom, and all your students, boom.
Done. Caesar. Done.
Yeah, done.
I like that.
You know?
So when you're, when you have, you know, like when you have a fighter that needs something specific,
yeah,
that you would say, maybe it doesn't fall under your specific coaching. Will mm-hmm. it just still be you because you noticed like, oh, this guy needs this type of work? Or will you almost, what do you call that? Like give that responsibility to another coach, like, hey, you need to work with this person.
Not necessarily. It's really going to depend on who they like coaching them the most, mm-hmm. who they respond to the best. I feel like that's big. Like I could send someone to JP and, you know, that JP could be telling them all the right things, but if they don't respond as well as say, like, you know, I have one fighter who works with Jordan Dowdy a whole lot with mitts and stuff like that. Okay, well, that guy's going to listen to whatever Jordan Dowdy says. So I go straight to Jordan Dowdy. I'm like, hey, I think this is what Clark needs to work on. And then boom, just throws it in their own way. But I think the relationship between a coach and a student's really important. And it's going to dictate how well they listen to you. Because
mm-hmm.
like I said, one coach could be telling you the complete right thing, but if you don't have a good response to that guy, you don't follow what they're saying as well. You know, you don't like him as much,
mm-hmm.
you know, anything like that. You know, everyone likes JP though, so
that's
everybody. It's a rule.
That's you're forced to, but not everybody has to like you.
Oh no, that's the main rule. It's like written on there, like you have to like me. You're not allowed to not like me at the gym.
Oh man,
if you don't like me, you better keep it quiet.
That's smart.
I'll thought police all you.
That's
know?
Smart. I feel like there's a good crew of my guys that don't like me. Yeah. But
do they respect you?
Oh yeah, it's an abuse reason that they don't like me.
Yeah,
you know,
well, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's still liking you. You're like their father.
Ah. And so I'm not holding up their legs when their leg
no,
is broken.
No. You know? Being a coach is like being a dad. You know, they're going to hate you for a good portion of their life. And then eventually they're going to come to the realization that you were the most important person to them and that you own them.
I like that. When you look at being a coach,
yeah.
how do you kind of define it? What do you think about, you know, is a coach and what is a valuable coach?
Not being a yes man is probably the most important thing about being a coach. You know, having rules, discipline, boundaries within your team, because the whole job is relationships.
Yeah.
You know, like I could be the best coach in the world, but if I can't manage relationships, I can't do anything. You know, like if I can't keep the team cohesive, like I do have very strong rules and I don't care who you are. You could be Sean, you could be Danny, who I live with, you know, mm-hmm. and if you don't follow those rules, I'll tell you to kick rocks and get out of here and don't come back. You know, and a lot of those rules are, you know, there's no internal, I don't allow for internal strife going on. Like I nip that pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if there's an argument, I don't really care who's right or wrong. If it's going on between them and not between the two of them and me, if it's going on between the two of them and everybody else, that's a huge issue.
Yeah.
If you know what I'm talking
yeah,
about.
Like, yeah.
If it's those two people and me, that's not much of an issue. That's something we can resolve, but you can't let the cancer spread through the entire gym. And I've had that happen. This isn't necessarily something that I was just ingrained with.
Yeah.
Something I've had to learn, and I feel like it's something that coaches don't learn. They like to pick favorites. They like to play sides. They like to enforce rules for some people and not for others, which I do to a degree, mm-hmm. depending on who it is. You know, I'm like, if someone's showing up late, but they put in more effort than the guys that are showing up on time, like, I don't care as much if he shows up late, but if the other guys are showing up late, that's a huge issue. Mm-hmm. You get about as much work in half the time. You know? So I think that's a big one. Managing relationships as a coach is probably the most important thing besides knowing what the fuck they're talking about.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So for you, what are things that as a coach you do? I know you're huge on watching instructionals.
Oh yeah.
What are some other things that you do to kind of sharpen your coaching ability?
Number one, I don't care if my students have stuff that I don't have that they add to the equation that I add into my own. You know what I mean? Like, that, I feel like a lot of coaches don't do that. I feel like they fight against new ideas coming from below them, mm-hmm. other than embracing them and adding them to the curriculum. Mm-hmm. I don't ever give those guys credit for it.
Of course, that
would be ridiculous.
It's your idea.
I invented it.
Yeah. Right?
I invented jiu-jitsu. I invented MMA. It was all me.
Yep. You know? Every YouTube short that I have, no idea has ever been mine. You know, yeah. I just saw one of my guys do it. Yeah. You know, like, oh, this would be a good video right here.
Exactly. I'm supposed to steal stuff from everybody. I think that's just important, just being a leader. Mm-hmm. You know, JW, when I first started my gym, JW messaged me just like one line. It's like, you're a leader of men now, mm-hmm. you know? And like, that's just been something that I've held on to quite a bit, that I've got to lead them. I can't let them lead me, and that's a big one. But I also can't be a complete tyrant. You know, I'm like a half tyrant, you know? You know, like even in the Roman Empire, they still had a Senate. They didn't have to listen to them, but they were still there, right?
How do you balance it? How do you balance going with, you know, because this is something I do too, is like, if somebody has a good idea, I really don't care who it is, and I don't care where that idea came from. If it works, that's what we care about,
absolutely,
right?
That's all we care about.
And so how do you balance, though, you know, because not every idea is as valuable. Right. Yeah. And it would even say 99% of the ideas, even 99% of the ones that I'm bringing to the table, are trash.
Yeah.
And so how do you as the leader go, all right, this is the 1% that we're going to focus on, that we're going to care about, and you know, how do you?
Well, I still train, so I test it out myself quite a bit, you know, and you're going to learn really quickly that way also if something's a good technique or not. And I videotape all the sparring sessions. So when we start implementing stuff, if I see it start to be used pretty repeatedly in the training room, with success while I'm watching them, like I can filter that out pretty easily, actually, you know, because bad ideas are going to be exposed.
Yeah.
They're going to be exposed, and they're going to be exposed quickly.
That makes sense.
Both me and the people that are doing it, you know, just time, process of elimination. You know, if we lose a fight because of one thing like that, that hurts. Like I suffer when my guys lose. It's brutal. Not as much like if they lose like a jiu-jitsu match or something, that's nothing. But if I watch one of my guys get beat up in a fist fight, especially if they're professional, that just scars me forever. So, you know, I get obsessed with what works. How can we change it? So, yeah, process of elimination, really, and relentlessly trying to add new things and get rid of things that I had held on to that do not work, may have never worked, or possibly no longer work on today's competition. You know, I used to be really big into playing guard in MMA. Like, I'm like, this is something you can do. Now I'm like, unless you're, like, unreal in that position, it should not be the focus. You know, the focus should be getting up, you know, in MMA. But I used to be much bigger on, you know, like, you can fight a little bit off your back. And I still am, me personally. But, like, I have to separate that from everybody else in the room, because everybody else in the room can't do that yet, you know? So, like, we can't just sit there and focus on, all right, we're going to be great guard players when a guy's trying to punch you when you only have 5 minutes, you know, which you probably only really have 2 minutes because it took some time to get you down there. The first option needs to be to stand up, and that's something that I had to embrace quite a bit. And, you know, luckily, you know, Craig Jones, you know, he found out about that just around the same time I did. Great lines. Think alike. So he started implementing that as well on his instructional. He's got so much good stuff on. Like, I think he's the best for MMA.
Really?
grappling wise on the ground. Yeah, probably.
What is it that he has different that you would say?
He works with Volkanovski.
Yeah.
That's really what it is. And like he's just kind of already had, I think he already had a bunch of ideas from his own grappling style, because I think he's been held down by guys like Kynan and stuff like that a lot. And I think he wanted to get away from that. And then he watched all the MMA fighters focus more on getting up and like how hard it actually is to do jiu-jitsu on a guy that does not want to play jiu-jitsu.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of changes the entire game. Which is why I think the ADC style of grappling is the most effective style of grappling for MMA. Because it focuses on wrestling, getting up, submissions on bottom, or quick submissions, quick sweeps on bottom, and then heavy wrestling, and being able to hold a guy down. Because in ADCC, since you don't get points until their shoulders are on the floor, it changes the game completely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in MMA, you don't really – you can say you got a takedown, but your takedown means – Almost. We're going to say almost nothing if you don't get the guy flat and do some damage on him.
Mm-hmm.
So that style, and he's been embracing that style quite a bit. So I think he's amazing for MMA fighters. They should go get his stuff ASAP.
That makes a lot of sense. That's something interesting, though, that you just said is – so my buddy Chris always explains it like this. Your coach gave you a parasite that it is okay to – play on your back.
Yeah.
And he's like, and what if you just didn't have that? He's like, because so many guys, when they come into jiu-jitsu naturally, will get put on their back and then just try to get up. Especially guys that wrestled forever.
Yeah.
They'll get put on their back and they'll just try to get up. And then at this point, we tell them like, hey, you should be doing jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
You need to just lay down. You know, just stay down. But the truth is, it almost creates this thing where it makes a lot of people that don't know how to actually hold down another person.
Yeah.
And from a jiu-jitsu standpoint, what are some things you think people could be doing better to even understand that? Because I know that this, for a lot of guys that just listen to, or that just do jiu-jitsu, like, what do you mean? What do you mean? I hold people down all the time, but you really, when you go with somebody who is, like, I have a guy that just naturally has this ability, good balance, strong and athletic, grappled for a while, like with an MMA focus, and his ability to just get up out of most things, whether you're wearing a gi, whether you're not, it's so hard for so many guys to deal with.
It comes a lot from the rule set that you play, as most things. In jiu-jitsu, especially in the gi, a sweep is easier than a takedown most of the time, right? So if you are down two, you're like, okay, I could get up and try to take this guy down, but he already took me down, so we should focus on sweeping him, right? And I think that's where a lot of it comes from. The rules are a big factor for it, which is why in ADCC it's like it's a little different, because when you did get the takedown, well, it's not really a takedown until you're on your back, so it's actually easier to just not get scored on by going to turtle and standing up. So if you want to be an MMA fighter, you have to be really good at turtle, like really good, like obscenely good, obscenely good at turtle. Because you could do one of two things. You can be defensive off your back, take no damage, maybe submit or sweep the guy, but probably lose the round.
Yeah.
Or you could get really, really obscenely good at turtle, to where you could turtle. The threat of you getting your back taken is limited because you're so good there, and you can stand back up to your feet within the course of 5 seconds. You know, so, and that's why you see a lot of these guys are becoming insane back takers. In ADCC, because that's the route it's going. Like it's are you good in turtle versus are you good at taking the back, as opposed to are you good at passing versus sweeping, which I think is what jiu-jitsu has been mostly about for a while, is passing versus sweeping. The guy that can get the takedown versus the guy that can't, and the guy that can pass and the guy that can sweep. So in MMA, it's just a little bit different because sweeping is just kind of off the table. Not completely off the table, still very useful, but it's not going to be your priority when a guy takes you down. It's like, oh, I got to sweep him to score those points back. It's no, I got to make his takedown null. Because if the guy doesn't do damage, the takedown really in the modern scoring system is not as big. It used to be back in the day, probably when we first started training. Whereas if you got a takedown in an MMA fight, you won the round.
Yeah.
You know, it's nonsense. It was silly,
but
it played factor. Now it's all damage. So the guy can take you down and you can pop up and you can hit him a couple more times and he hits you, then you still win the round. So I am a big believer that turtle, like turning to your base, is a big one. And then learning how to use your butterfly guard is a big one too. And closed guard is death.
Yeah.
For the most part. Like, this is coming from someone who uses a close guard in MMA. I'm just saying,
yeah,
for most people, close guard is going to be death because you're literally locking the guy down yourself. That's the whole purpose of close guard. And you're going to lose those 5 minutes. That guy's going to sit there and hit you for 5 minutes and beat you up.
Who do you, and it might be Craig Jones, but who do you watch for Turtle?
For Turtle? Craig's a big one for Turtle. He's good. Giancarlo. I love Giancarlo. And I love Giancarlo for offense the best.
Yeah.
Put it that way. I think he's got one of the best back-taking instructionals against a guy who's trying to stand up on you that exists.
Yeah.
You know, the, what is it? Chest to back, arms under the, behind the elbows. That's a big one. But yeah, he Craig's a big one. Watching a lot of MMA, just watching a lot of guys that are really, really good at it. And I mean, there are just like a lot of these good wrestlers that can even get these guys down. They don't even like to put the hooks in anyway. So, you know, just standing up. But Craig's a big one. I like Craig Jones a lot for Turtle. Gordon too. If you can stay awake for an entirety of his instructional, you can get it, you know?
I competed against Giancarlo once and he took my back and he choked me.
He's good at that.
Yeah. He? It's like you said, he is very skilled at that.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
But he took my back from bottom. You know, he was on bottom and he took my back.
Yeah,
that shouldn't
count.
It shouldn't even count.
It doesn't count. What was he doing there?
I had swept him, but it didn't matter. Yeah. It didn't seem to make a difference.
What a leap he's made. Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. Yeah, from getting swept by Josh to, you know. Going to win an ADCC. Exactly. That's a leap. Right?
That was my favorite performance probably ever.
Oh, my gosh.
It was incredible.
Mm-hmm. It really was. And it was like you see a guy that – what's interesting in jiu-jitsu, in any sport, people tend to get to a level and then that seems to be the level that they're at, right? And with a guy like him, something that he did differently was – he was at a certain level. It looked like he would probably never be able to beat Hulk. He'd never be able to beat Lucas Barbosa.
Yeah.
And then he beat him at Pans, and then he crushed him at ADCC.
Yep.
You know, and it went from like, wait, this guy is, he was like, you know, he was a first tier guy, but he's not the best first tier guy, right? And, you know, he made that change.
Yep. And yeah, just making a change. And sometimes you know, I'm sure his original coaches were fantastic, but you know, it's a level of coaching that John Donaher probably brings to the table is probably a little bit different, especially in that rule set.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's the king at that rule set.
Yeah.
And the B team's number two. Self-admittedly, I think.
I think so.
And it just goes to show you what good coaching and good focus on exactly what you're trying to do. I think that's a big problem with a lot of jiu-jitsu guys that come into MMA. Is that I think they have a little bit of a split focus. You know, still doing jiu-jitsu while doing MMA, you kind of have to gear your whole style, your whole focus into MMA style grappling. I think the wrestlers do a really good job of that. You know, you don't see a whole lot of wrestlers in MMA shooting low singles, even if they were doing it a long time ago, but you still see a lot of jiu-jitsu guys playing close guard, you know, and trying to go for submissions from close guard when they're on bottom.
And that's interesting, kind of just where you went from that is there aren't, there really aren't wrestling competitions while you are fighting MMA. That doesn't really exist, you know? And you probably don't have people doing standard freestyle wrestling practices while they're fighting MMA. But in jiu-jitsu, it still is non-specific, right?
Yeah.
But now you're seeing more jiu-jitsu guys that are not only focused on, you know, like, okay, I'm going to do gi or no gi, but like, I'm going to only train and care about this specific rule set in gi or no gi. Yeah. And you're seeing that more and more. Is that something you try to push your guys to do?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I do think the level of jiu-jitsu and MMA is getting significantly better.
Yes.
And significantly more sport specific. And it's really showing. Mm-hmm. Really, really showing. You just look at Brennan Allen. The other day, you don't watch him, so
yeah. who?
Incredible jiu-jitsu performance, you know, against another really good jiu-jitsu guy. You know, just you got to adapt. It's a little bit different. You're not going to have as much loose passing. You're not going to have as much side control. Mm-hmm. Side control from MMA just it's in my opinion, not useless because there's certain positions in side control that are useful for MMA. Mm-hmm. But the second you take your arm from under the guy's head to punch him, he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's turning the turtle and he's getting up to his feet. You know, so it's just adaptive, which is crazy because, you know, when we're white belts, we're taught side control is the goat of all positions. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get side control. Nobody can get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't go to mount.
Yeah.
Don't you know, you know, people just bridge and roll you if you go to mount. Yeah,
exactly. You know, like you've always said, side control is for people who aren't good at mount.
Yep.
I'm a firm believer in that.
Dude,
a firm believer.
It's so interesting to see, like, you know, maybe it means that we're old. I mean, you're significantly older than me.
Yes,
but
exactly. I'm dead, basically.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you see that, you go, man, there has been so much change in what jiu-jitsu was, and obviously what MMA was. But MMA mm-hmm. was so young at that time, you expect that. But even in jiu-jitsu that was a little more established, there's been so much change in what jiu-jitsu even is, what positions matter, how you attain those positions. Mm-hmm. It's just so interesting to see that.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I don't see a lot as much side control anymore.
You don't. And it really was this thing that guys would not, I mean, Hodger Gracie was the only guy playing mount.
Yeah.
People would just be like, no, you can't hold mount.
Yeah.
You can't do it. And now it's like everybody is seeing, you see the effectiveness of it with so many more competitors and you go, oh, there is a way to hold mount, and it's actually really significant and actually matters so much to do.
Much easier than we originally thought.
Uh-huh. And that, are there any, you know, you already brought up turtle. Are there any other, which, again, I think is still, I think that's new. I think that people aren't seeing how important, even in the jiu-jitsu space, that turtle is becoming, and the, you know, being able to wrestle from turtle, or, you know, whatever you would call it, but just being able to sweep, to get on top from turtle.
Yeah.
What if anything, is there any other kind of future things that you're seeing?
Octopus guard.
Really?
Octopus guard for MMA, I think, is going to be huge. Just your ability to get your that waist lock, you know, much easier to get when a guy's trying to punch you.
Yeah, because there's distance.
Yeah, there's distance, and you can sneak under their arm. Like, you have to imagine, like, when they're trying to cross face you, it's a little bit harder to peek your head under that armpit. But if they're punching you, you can literally sometimes just sit up there. And, you know, Michael Bisping was probably the first guy to really be good at it in MMA, but it, like, really didn't catch on. But, like, nobody really held Michael Bisping down much.
Mm-hmm.
Chael did it from the back position in their fight. In the third round of their fight, but really, like, when, like, even watch when GSP fought him, GSP took him down, and Michael Bisping would go to that lat. He'd sneak under the arm, he'd go to the lat, put his butterfly hook in, scoot his butt out, and stand up to his feet. So octopus guard is a huge thing that we've been drilling. We drill it just constantly at our gym right now. And, you know, Craig Jones teaches this, like, lat grab.
Mm-hmm.
You reach and you grab the lat, you put the pressure down on the head, and just for takedown defense and getting held down, I think that's huge. And butterfly guard, I think this new thing in jiu-jitsu, like, especially in no-gi, with, like, this huge emphasis on butterfly guard, is going to pay off in MMA, because you're not locking yourself down in butterfly guard. You're not just you're not helping the guy hold you down from butterfly guard. So that's a big one. And not just and just not playing a standard half guard, you know. Oh, and the giggler sweep. Giggler sweep, huge. MMA, if you don't have a good giggler sweep, don't even try. Go home, quit. You're going to get held in half guard and beat up repeatedly every day. You know, when I teach half guard moves in MMA, giggler sweep starts everything, because the guy's getting chest to chest to you, punch you, you gotta do something about that.
Yeah man, that's interesting. I think that I definitely see that when you say that about, you know, my limited MMA knowledge, when you say that about the octopus guard, that makes so much sense. One, you're creating a great angle, but two, just in combination with that giggler sweep, it really is not laying flat on your back and getting punched.
And you can't get hit from octopus guard.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you don't, and like you don't have to sweep from there. That's another thing. You can just literally just come up to your knees, and then you're in, like, a 50-50 where you each have each other's lat. And then, like, if you just decide to stand up from that position instead of wrestle from it, a lot of times they're just going to, just going to separate, and I think that is going to be a huge one. And also, just conceptually, keeping the arms behind the elbows when you try to take the back at all times until a finish.
Yeah.
I think that's a big one too. One that we stress a lot. Like when you're in a rear waist lock position, you're behind the elbows. When you're taking the back, you're behind the elbows because you get so slippery and people are punching you and there's a cage. And if you slip off the back in MMA, it is such a monstrously horrible thing. You know, like in jiu-jitsu, you can get the back real quick and you might have a seatbelt position and you know, you get your 4 points, and if you slip off, you still got your points, and you're still ahead, and now you're on bottom, and it's like, all right, we're just not going to let the guy pass the whole rest of the fight, and then I win.
Yeah.
In MMA, you could get the back and hold it for 30 seconds, and you have the back, and you slip off, and the guy ends up on top of you for the last 30 seconds, and it's 30 seconds versus 30 seconds. It's not jiu-jitsu. They don't care if you had the back.
Mm-hmm.
If he's hammering you, and the bell rings, and he's on top of you at the end of the bell, he just took away your back control. He didn't need to pass your guard. He didn't need to. He's just on top hitting you.
Yeah.
You know, so I like to stay behind the elbows and really use that, you know, John Donahoe, Gordon Ryan, like power half system to not even really take the back. Like you get the back, you get the power half, they go to flat. And a lot of, in jiu-jitsu, you follow the guy and you end up taking his back and trying to choke him.
Mm-hmm.
In MMA, you power half him and then he starts going back, and then you settle into his half guard on top. Mm-hmm.
It's the value of toss.
Yes, exactly.
You know, you see that. And honestly, I see, you know, and it just could be my jiu-jitsu specifically, but I just see how I see so many guys want to take the back because, you know, they want to get the points, especially in mount, and then they lose all position completely.
Or they're tired and they want to get the choke. That's when I usually see it. When I usually see people go seatbelt and just try to throw their hooks in to try and they're like, oh, I got to get the choke because I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you stay behind the elbows and you fight it from turtle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it just, you know, I don't know when that, I'm sure it was probably when I started to get to learn from Henry a little more. It was just this idea of this big shift in like, oh, top is so much more valuable than I've ever realized. Mm-hmm. And I'm, you know, and there are these random parts of jiu-jitsu that are just taught as jiu-jitsu that make me go, okay, now top is valueless. I'm just going to fall off so I can have a chance at the back. And it's just that change of thinking for me has increased my cardio tenfold while I have been training less and eating way more.
I wonder if that technique just made your cardio better.
Yeah, and so
resting heart rate just dropped the second you learned it.
It's like, man, I've been losing great position all the time. So something just a little change in the conversation. You know, we had kind of hinted at it last time, but I don't think we really got into it last time. But you are currently in the midst of a studio build.
Oh, yeah.
And you are going to start, a podcast, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've been talking about it for about a year now. I think I mentioned it on the first one
we
ever did here, but finally it's getting built. You know, we have an amazing front area to our gym that we bought in April, and it's got a lot of offices and desks, and we've just been amassing the funds and the resources to do it. And like, yeah, we've got a really nice stuff. You know, we just pretty much took everything that you had in this studio and just bumped it up one.
Just went up one.
Yeah. And yeah. So, you know, we're coming after you.
I get it. So what do you kind of have an idea of the format, how the show's going to go?
I want to live stream everything.
Okay.
For the most part, I mostly want to do live streams. So, quick turnarounds, and that's going to be a difficult venture.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like live streaming is like the kind of future of where most podcasts are going.
Because it's interactive, right?
It's interactive. Uh-huh. I want an interactive podcast. I want to chat, all that stuff, people asking questions on the podcast. But really, I'm planning on doing two. I'm going to do one where it's just basically me and a guest or not, and Brian over there. My Bryce.
Yep, you're Bryce.
I tried to make sure they had the same first two letters. You know?
I like... Oh,
yeah.
Shoot.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Oh,
there
shoot.
Go.
Man.
Because he's Brian with a Y. He's got a Y in his name.
They've been good together over there in that corner, but I was really worried they were going to get
it's
in a fist
weird
fight.
What who know, even knows what they're doing in that corner? We're not watching. We're looking at each other. They could be doing God knows what over there. I don't know. But yeah, you know, I decided to get a Bryce, get a bunch of cameras. Basically, I'm just copying everything that you do and just.
It couldn't go a worse way about
I'm
it, man.
Gonna switch it to MMA, you know.
Couldn't be a worse person to imitate.
You know, that's what I thought too. But you know, you got to start somewhere.
I like that.
You know,
okay.
And maybe we'll imitate, you know, other people going forward. Like, you know, Joe Rogan. I hear he does a pretty good one.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, heard of that one.
I've heard of it.
Yep. But that's where we're going. And then I want to do one where I do like a local business show, where I just bring other local business people in, you know. Me and Brian are talking about having. I'm renting the studio out, and we're gonna hopefully have a cast of characters and a couple shows going at the same time of like our students and a couple people that already have podcasts up. So
that's awesome. Do you have names for any of this stuff?
What do you mean?
Like, does a podcast have a name?
Oh, yet? I'm not giving the podcast a name yet until you're on. You got to come on.
Oh, okay. Oh,
the podcast.
That's
when you know, because you'll be my first real guest.
I'm excited about it, man. Exactly. I'm gonna get you canceled on the first episode.
I don't think I can get canceled at this point. I think I'm uncancelable.
Oh, I've got. I've got some stuff.
Oh well, cool. We'll call it the Canceled Podcast with Josh McKinney.
I like that.
Yeah.
To all zero listeners right now.
Yes, all zero listeners. Yeah. Exactly. But I'm pretty excited about it. I've been wanting to get into this space too, even just from like a marketing perspective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for my gym, you know, we've been doing so much digital marketing lately that podcast is definitely the next step.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know how it does. Do you get conversions from students from your podcast?
I've had some. That's I would good. Say, you know, my podcast is so specific for people that already train. Mm-hmm. If I have somebody coming over, it's usually like they just moved here or something like that. Or, you know, they were like, oh man, you were bashing everybody in St. Louis, and so I decided to come to your gym.
You beat AJ Agazon.
Oh, yeah.
You saved the world, basically Batman.
That's what... that's like... It makes me sad that's like the only positive comment. All the other comments I have on like YouTube would be like, oh, this guy's gay. And then it's like, hey, thank you for beating AJ. those are the comments that I get.
It's just me commenting that over and over again. Yeah. That's pretty cool, Josh. Oh, no, wait, I'm the gay one. I'm both of those guys, by the way.
Okay, because we can't end it on that note. I was going to go we've gone over our standard finisher question of the best advice that you've ever gotten. So we always keep things a lot lighter when you and I are on the show.
Yes, a lot lighter.
I thought we could do, off the top of your head, what is the worst jiu-jitsu advice or MMA advice that you've ever gotten?
Oh, God. This is a tough one. When the guy tries to punch you, hit him with your forehead.
Where did you get that? Like, hit his hand with your forehead?
Yeah, like boom, you know?
Who gave you that advice?
I don't want to throw any names out there, but I had an old boxing coach.
Who no.
Literally, like, when they jab you, just headbutt them. I'm like, I don't know if that's the best advice. Maybe I just move my head, like, out of the way.
How long did you accept that as like good advice?
Yes.
Okay, because that's the tough thing is when you have like a coach, you just accept what they say as gospel.
Oh, and shrimping is a thing. That's a good one too.
You know? Yeah. When people told you about shrimping?
When people told me about shrimping, I thought it was most. I still make the kids do it because it eats up, you know, a good 3 minutes of time.
Oh yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's exercise.
Yeah,
though,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. You gotta know how to shrimp, but like just like the shrimp being how you get out of bad positions is probably the worst jiu-jitsu advice that I've ever gotten.
That is still passed down.
Yes, still passed down. And obviously there's still times and places for shrimping, but like back in the day, I thought it was like the most important escape that you could possibly do.
And the fact that people spend 10 minutes every single, they get 1 hour of, you know, maybe 3 hours of jiu-jitsu total, and 30 minutes of those are spent shrimping up and down the mats.
Oh, yeah.
Is the most frustrating thing in the world for me when you look at like, okay, how often is this specific movement ever done? Mm-hmm. And then you look at the fact that this specific movement only matters if you can do it while somebody's weight is on you.
Yeah.
The shrimp with no human being on top of you who can't get on their side when no human being is on top of them.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
You shouldn't be doing jiu-jitsu if you can't do that. Right?
Yeah.
But then when you, it's like, This is one of the this is one of my main things that I hate in jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, that's why I brought it up.
I'm glad
I knew you'd have a response.
I'm glad that you brought
it
up.
I've heard that one.
Yeah.
I'm the one listener of your podcast every week. Like, it's like the one guy.
We don't have one listener, bro.
Well, when you do have one, it's either me. Sometimes.
It's either you.
Whenever I'm on.
It's you or Bryce checking the audio quality. Yeah, no.
Whenever I'm on the podcast, I definitely listen to it. So there's one listener.
All right, Mop. Anything you want to say to finish? I've enjoyed our conversation as always.
I'm still not sorry for that cancellation thing from earlier, you know?
Yeah, or
still
any of the cancellations.
Any of the cancellations, but particularly that one with that one person, not sorry.
Okay. I'm glad that you haven't apologized.
Nope, and I never will apologize because apologizing is for little girls and children.
I like that. Yes. I like that. Mop, thank you. Thank you for being on the show, buddy.
You're welcome. Anytime. I love coming out. And we'll have you on soon.
I'll make sure the listeners know that they should jump on to that one so they can see the cancellation. They can see the racism and bigotry that I'm going to be coming on after.
Well, I hope so. I was hoping that would be the whole format of the show. Racism, bigotry, and politics.
All right, perfect. Yes. I'll bring everything I know.
Be sure to dress up like Donald Trump for it. Oh, got to get extra canceled.
I like it. I'm in.
Here we go.
All right.
Sounds good.
Thank you for being on the show.
You're welcome.
And that is the episode. Hope you guys enjoyed this one. These, like I said, these conversations with Mop are always really funny for me. They're always really fun. I feel like I laugh more in these episodes than maybe any other episode that I get to do. And yeah, this is no different. We definitely make fun of Bryce way more than any other episode. So sorry, Bryce. Sorry, producer Bryce. We don't mean to abuse you, but I guess it's just part of the producing job. That's all I have for you guys today. I don't have a whole lot to say. We're still in the, I guess, Happy New Year. I should have said that at the top of the hour. I don't have a whole lot of new stuff. This coming week, hopefully, I will have some new stuff to tell you guys about, and the commercial is going to change. I have kind of some big announcements, some not big changes to the show, but big changes to the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show brand, and I think you guys are really going to be excited about them. I think they're going to be, I think they're going to help you 10x your jiu-jitsu and or 10x your jiu-jitsu progression, and I think it's going to be the biggest moves that we've made on the I Suck at Jiu-Jitsu show. And so hopefully this Thursday when we do our next Q&A episode, I will be able to tell you guys all about that. So be sure to turn into those episodes. But besides that, hope you guys have a good day. Hope you picked something up from this episode. Hope you laughed a little. And most importantly, I hope that today's episode helps you guys suck just a little bit less at jiu-jitsu. Have a great day, guys.